Hey, Brennan.
Hey, Alan.
Yet another Not a Thing podcast coming in from wherever you are and wherever I am. It's fun. It's exciting.
My lawyer has advised me not to state my location at this time. I plead the fifth. That feels right, just saying that into a microphone. It's like, my lawyer has advised me.
Yeah, and you have to lean in just a little bit when
Oh,
you say it.
I did lean in when I said that. No one is here. I'm in a room by myself, and I still leaned in.
Excellent. Well,
That's commitment.
yeah, we've got a lot of topics to run into this week, but the first thing we have to do is mention a topic that we forgot to cover last week.
Right.
About
I blame you entirely. I take no responsibility.
Well,
Alan, I'd like you to meet this bus. Perhaps you would roll under it. It'll be fun.
excellent. Yeah, I can take that blame. That's fine. Only because that means we've had a little extra time to mull it over, and I've also like read a couple more issues in the meantime. So what's happening is actually, I don't remember who exactly. I know it's someone involved in Lost, or what, who was
It was
involved in Lost.
Carlton Cuse,
Okay. And
one of the
he.
co-EPs.
Okay. So he is writing or producing or developing, or I'm not sure what the industry term is, but is somehow connected to someone who wants to bring the Sixth Gun to TV. As an episodic show, The Sixth Gun is a comic book that I found out about. Actually, we found out about it at the same time. We both
Yeah.
were at WonderCon in San Francisco, which hopefully it will come back to San Francisco, hopefully this year.
Fingers crossed.
Yes, that should be a thing. Two comic conventions in the southern part of California should not be a thing. But
Yes.
anyway, it was at the Oni Press panel, and it was fun. I mean, it sounded like a really neat premise. So the short form on the premise is there's six guns of legend, and they all kind of convey some mysterious power on the person that wields it, and the person that wields it essentially doesn't you can't no one else can use that gun other than the person that it's bound to when and the only way you can get it unbound from someone is to kill them. And so it's very kind of creepy from that perspective, but then it's set all in a an Old West time frame. And so it's got gunslinging, it's got magic, it's got semi-demonic kind of things going on. There's some
Monks with Gatling guns.
yes.
That was what sold me on that. We got the free copy on Free Comic Book Day. Was it the Zero issue? And like one of the last panels is like going and there's monks with this Gatling gun just blasting away. It's like, yes, I will read this.
That was one of the teaser shots during the panel, if I'm remembering right, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is let's see, it's got like a running storyline of a guy who's a treasure hunter who wanted to collect all the guns because they're treasure, so that's what he wants. But what he finds out is that well, the guns themselves, are kind of sought after and powerful. There's a lot of kind of unsavory characters that also want the gun, maybe even more than he does. And he is kind of tossed in with the person that the Sixth Gun is bound to, who's this like the daughter of a preacher who never used it because he was so afraid of it. And now she's all of a sudden has to defend herself, and the power that gun gives is seeing the future. So you know, she's it's a really interesting kind of setup, because there's the long format kind of what are the guns for, what do they do, and then all the people that want them kind of make up the shorter time frame kind of elements of the comic. I think they've done maybe 20 issues, maybe not that many, and they've released them in trade paperback chunks, which is the way I prefer to consume comic books. So it works out really nicely. Indeed. So each of the chunks is its own storyline. You know, it's kind of like how The Walking Dead releases, for that, you know, for lack of a better example. It's a pretty good example, right?
Yeah, it's
I like The Walking Dead. That's coming back soon. Not too soon. We'll have to save that for when it actually does come back. We have 2 weeks.
Yes.
It's good. But that comic is fun. And Oni Press has had a lot of success, I think, with kind of realizing some of their properties. So, like, the other big one that comes out of them is the Scott Pilgrim stuff. So, the
style... Didn't they also do... Wasn't it Stumptown?
Yes. Yeah. Stumptown was good. I think... I don't know if that's in development, but it should be. Kind of detective-y, mystery, all in Portland. It's like the anti-Portlandia, you know?
You're not going to put a bird on this mystery.
But the styles for their comics are kind of all over the place. So it's not that... It doesn't have that kind of anime style that Scott Pilgrim has. And Stumptown is a very kind of realistic style. And this is in the middle. It's very much, you know... a nod to like spaghetti westerns, but also having like really interesting kind of magic and horror elements to it too. So it's like I always, because when I think of comics that are in that kind of vein, I think of, like, unfortunately, Jonah Hex.
The comic, not the movie.
Yes, the comic, seriously, not the movie. It's that not, kind of not really a thing. Yeah, just really gritty, kind of, you know, big sweeping character kind of comic, and it fits really well with the theme. I think the magic elements to it are nicely kind of added in and not too cheesy, but there are some kind of cool, it does some kind of cool stuff with the mythology of the guns and everything else, which I'm a really big fan of, like the way that, you know, they've done a really good job of building the backstory of it. It reminds me actually a lot of how they do, how Neil Gaiman kind of works with when he was working with the Sandman books. Just like there's this whole chunk of mythology that has like hooks into stuff that you may have read about in something else. So there's, you know, there's some stuff about like the Knights Templar in the story, and there's some stuff about like voodoo, and so it hits on those things that you might have caught from other, either pop culture or literature, and then really goes off in their own direction. It's really well done. So I'm excited to see how that kind of translates into TV, because I'm just a big fan of Westerns in general.
Westerns and comics. Sounds good.
Yeah, it's a good thing. Oh, I'll have to, that reminds me, I'll have to link. There was a kind of 16-bit style game, kind of Japanese RPG style game that was that just came out about maybe 2 weeks ago on Adult Swim Games, which I'd never actually played any of them. I keep seeing the ads for them when I watch you know, TV. I'm like, oh, maybe I'll check out this one. And I just fell in love with it because it's a Western theme, and the thing about it that's just perfect is all of the music. So it's got that.
What's that one called?
Westerado is the name of the game. So
Westerado.
So okay. I'll link that one. It's good. It's, you know, your family's killed and you have to find out, you know, who did it. And so it's got those RPG elements where you have to, you know, you just travel from location to location doing kind of one-off missions for people in the towns, and each of them, they either give you money, which helps you, you know, buy, you know, stuff or health or whatever, or they give you clues to who killed your family, and those are kind of, you know, every once in a while. And so whenever you hit those, it's like, oh my gosh, I'm one step closer to my goal. So it's a fun game for sure. Kind of off of a Western theme, but still in a kind of nerdy comic book theme, is some news that also came out last week, towards the end of last week, about J.J. Abrams.
Yeah, he's making this little independent feature. I think it's a real passion project of his. It's in a series. It's a little something called Star Wars.
What, Star Wars? I thought,
yeah,
that,
Star Wars.
I thought he was working on some movies about Star Trek. Am I doing that wrong?
Well, if you trek far enough, you're going to encounter some sort of war. So it makes sense.
So I am flabbergasted that that this is okay. I love J.J. Abrams. I think his stuff is great. I'm a little concerned about him helming both Star Trek and Star Wars, as I like to keep those kind of separate in my brain.
Well, yeah, but if you look at the Star Trek movie that he's made, the first one, I mean, we haven't seen the second one yet.
That's true, yeah.
But there was a lot of elements of Star Wars that were put into that.
Sure.
Which I'd be interested to see what he can do when he doesn't have to kind of hide it in Star Trek.
Yeah.
Or maybe the new Star Wars movie will just be a lot of people standing around and debating the ethics of things.
Well, I think one of my favorite tweets about it, and I think you may have retweeted this one, was that someone was saying that you know, Tatooine has two suns, so it should make for double the lens flares.
I think
it would be, I am just in favor of someone else other than George Lucas helming Star Wars, because that really needs, you know, some new blood and some, you know, if it's going to really sustain itself beyond beyond what has been already, you know, put out for Star Wars, if they really want it to be like a new direction for the franchise, they should pick someone. But,
well, if there's a guy who has a proven track record of that, it's J.J. Abrams. I mean, look what he did for Star Trek. Yep. That franchise was dead.
Yep. Definitely pulled that one back. So I'm almost like stylistically opposed to it. Like, I don't want them to look the same. I really want that to be its own thing. At the same time, I'm glad that someone else is taking the reins for the Star Wars movies. And I think, especially because of Disney's involvement with you know, the Star Wars stuff in general, I think that will also kind of, you know, up the quality and hopefully defocus it from, you know, whatever the hell it's focused on right now.
You know who they should have given it to? They should have given it to Andrew Stanton. Like, you know, we know you totally destroyed us with John Carter, but let's give him another shot.
Well, apparently, what did I just read? There was a blurb for Sexiest Men of films in 2012, and whoever played John Carter was in that list. And it's like, it didn't help the movie, but this guy's still hot. So I'm glad, you know, the objectification of men is still a thing. Good. But yeah, J.J. Abrams, good luck. Do well, please.
I'm optimistic. Yes. I'm optimistic.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I'm gonna see it. I mean,
well, yeah, obviously. But the other good thing is they've canceled or at least postponed the 3D re-release of the other prequels.
Oh, golly.
Which okay. They're going to do.
Okay.
So we've been saved that. Not a thing.
Yeah, because they could still do it 3D, and they could still convert it all to 60 frames per second, and then, you know. all these things have happened before.
Crap at 60 frames per second is still crap, Alan.
It looks so much more it's crappy, though.
It looks more realistic.
Even more.
Or less realistic.
Oh, golly. Well, speaking of fancy cameras, apparently in Berlin, there's been kind of a push towards closed-circuit TV at a lot of places and just adding more and more cameras. And a lot of people are concerned, and apparently rightly so, that the laws are such that anyone, well, not anyone, but in theory, just the government. So if you trust your government, they can obtain...
Which, if you're in Germany, why not?
Yeah, why not?
They have a great track record.
So in theory, the German government can appropriate any of the camera footage from private CCTV cameras, which has some privacy implications because those are, in theory, just put out there to, you know, for loss prevention or security or whatever else. But on a like per site basis. I mean, that's what the C is. It's you know, closed circuit, right? So in theory, no one else should be able to access it. But there's been such a kind of pushback from you know, privacy groups and
hooligans.
Right, and people who, you know, value their civil liberties, essentially, and there's been this new kind of movement that's kind of taken over, and I don't know what platform they're using, if they're using Twitter or if they're using Facebook. It'd be really interesting to delve in a little deeper into what kind of they're using to catalog their missions. What's happening is people are playing a game where they find CCTV cameras and vandalize them, and they get it on, you know, they record it using like phone cameras or whatever, and then are uploading it as proof so they can get, you know, points or whatever. And it's this,
they've made a nice game of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's turned a, you know, whatever this form of protest is into, you know, they're gamifying protesting. it all comes back to, you know, what motivates people. You know, if you got to get your points, it's going to be much more enticing for you to smash that camera. You know, while we don't advocate the destruction of private property, I hope you do.
I advocate the destruction of private property. Go ahead, children. Smash it all. Smash all the drugs, too. Smash it.
Yeah. Well, I think the it does raise, you know, genuine privacy concerns, and it kind of speaks to the lack of whatever official channels there would be for something like that. I mean, it seems like it's just not a good setup for dealing with, you know, the actual problems of crime and whatever else that they're purporting to use the cameras to prevent. So it's kind of an interesting story coming out of Germany, which, you know, as we were saying, has a history of kind of interesting government interactions, shall we say.
Interesting government interactions. Wow. You know, if anyone should be covering Germany in CCTV cameras, it should be Poland and France.
Oh, yeah. So, also kind of in a camera vein, this last week, Twitter unveiled Vine, which is an app that that uses the Twitter platform to kind of publish things. But the app itself creates, I think it's 6-second videos.
Yeah, it's 6-second video. Yeah,
that you can tweet, and then it'll embed in the tweet, and you can see it and watch the video, and it will loop. And I think the videos can even have sound, but you're essentially making, it's essentially an animated GIF maker, or at least
this new technology.
All right, at least what I've seen from it is, I mean, you can take stills and turn it into a stop motion thing, or take clips of video and splice them together in the app. But you're essentially making a 6-second video that loops, and it's like an animated GIF, except it isn't viewable except on Twitter. And so I think it's a neat idea for, you know, to make, you know, to make little clips and to have kind of an interface for doing that. I'm a big fan of kind of documenting the world as you see it, and then, you know, kind of exporting that for other people to see it. Because I think, you know, you can do a lot of stuff with, you know, here's my perspective, here's this, here's that. But the bummer for me is that it creates another kind of information silo or walled garden or whatever kind of fancy term you want to use. But essentially, it's not something that you can view in anything else. I mean, it's not interoperable with Facebook or Google Plus or any other system. You have to be able to see a Twitter feed to do it. And, you know, I know we, I realized I was going to talk about this in a different show, but it was cut off by my internet connection.
tread lightly, Alan, tread lightly. Yes.
I'm going to say the I word on the podcast again.
Instagram.
So Instagram and their connection to Facebook, and how Facebook essentially broke the interoperability between Instagram and Twitter. It seems like a shot across the bow for that from Twitter's point of view to block, you know, Vine from showing up in any other platform. And then also I found out that Facebook also just updated their iPhone app anyway to do, you know, their own video kind of thing. And it's just a bummer that you know, the platforms that are made for sharing information are all fine sharing information, just not with each other or with anyone else that are in multiple systems. So while I think, you know, the Vine system should be a thing, I actually remember a while ago there was another app that was very similar called 12 Seconds, and it allowed you to, you know, make and upload 12-second clips. It was developed by some local folks that were in Santa Cruz, even, I think, if I'm remembering right. But
12 seconds is outrageous. That's far too long. It was like Titanic. What are we talking about here?
They were ahead of their time. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, I think, you know, making videos is probably the way it's going to go. I mean, photos and that is its own kind of platform now. Videos, they have YouTube and Vimeo for kind of longer format things. And I think this kind of, you know, medium format, middle format for short videos has some value. But the way that it's being implemented is like completely locked down. That's just the bummer. So open
yeah, platform. I would say, yeah, open platform is the pulse, is the platform of this podcast.
We're trying our best.
Platforms are open.
Yep. In that vein, for platforms, we have gotten a couple submissions for the logo. We're still looking. We're still evaluating. We're still working with the artists that have pulled those together. We really appreciate it. I think we're on the way. But if you have kind of a late entry that you want to pull together and send to us, check it out on our website, notathingpodcast.com, and talk to the HAL 900 to get your submission to us. We'd love to check it out and use it. It'd be great. So the walled garden thing, it's not so much a walled garden as it is a broken set of laws kind of kicked in over the weekend. It's related in only as much as they both relate to mobile phones, which is what's used for most kind of photos and videos nowadays. Is apparently over the weekend, one of the exceptions to the Digital Millennium Copyright Act expired, and specifically the exception about being able to unlock your own phone. And unlock, in this case, refers to unlocking it from the carrier that you bought it from. So if you bought it from AT&T, you could unlock it and then use it on T-Mobile or Metro PCS or so. I don't know if you could even do
that. Well, I don't know why you would do that, but you could.
But or you could bring it, you know, to Europe and then use whatever, you know, Deutsche Telekom or Telenor in Norway. Hi, Norwegians. Or something else. I mean, you know, just not be locked to whatever carrier you bought the phone from initially. And in theory, it's... Well, I don't know. I don't know how this is a good idea at all. In fact, do you have any idea?
No.
So
this just seems all bad.
Yeah, I mean, what I read was that essentially the exception is meant to these exceptions and the Digital Millennium Copyright Act as a whole, in my opinion, should not be a thing. Just because it was created out of, you know, a fear of copyright law on the internet, which I think has valid concerns, but the way that it was written and implemented is extremely poor, and lacks an understanding of the internet and technology.
It was written in a time and passed in a time where people were worried about Y2K.
Yes.
How good do you expect it to be?
Yeah. So in short, it has a lot of flaws in my opinion. And so this is one of the pieces of it. I mean, the carrier locking doesn't protect copyrights. I mean, the carrier locking, all it does is protect profits
corporations
for carriers. Right. So I on, you know, just on that front, I think it's silly. And the second part of it is, if I've bought this phone, why am I prevented from doing anything with it? I mean, I can understand if I'm doing something illegal with the phone, then that's illegal. But the act of unlocking the phone so it could be used on a different carrier, you know, is in and of itself not illegal. I mean, there's not even a... I don't even see how that's...
It's thought crime.
And thought crime is not a thing. If 1984 has taught me anything... It is not a thing.
That's right. I'm advocating smashing CCTV cams and jailbreaking your phones.
Yes. For those that like to jailbreak iPhones, supposedly there will be a... I just read somewhere on the internet, I'm sure you could find it, is they're planning to release the jailbreak software for... the newest iOS, which just came out today, and they're going to release it on Super Bowl Sunday. So there's that. Go Niners.
Go Niners.
That's as far as we'll go with a Super Bowl.
If you like your murdery team to win, you can go ahead and root for the Ravens, but then you're rooting for murder. So think about that.
Oh man, yeah, we unfortunately are not part of the media circus down in New Orleans.
Unfortunately,
yeah, or actually maybe I would say
fortunately,
Brendan, maybe you are. I'm not sure if you're down there. I mean, you know, your lawyer is not supposed to. You're not supposed to divulge that location, but
I can neither confirm nor deny that I am in New Orleans at the moment.
Yeah, I was just at a dinner, and on the TVs they had, I guess ESPN is there all week, broadcasting from New Orleans, apparently from the stadium, from the because they had the they had like this plastic kind of sheet behind them that was protecting them from the wind because it's like, you know, almost midnight out there. So that was kind of weird. But you know, what are you going to do with the 24-hour sports nation, but sports station, but fill it with that kind of stuff?
You couldn't possibly fill it with West Coast coverage. There's some hockey team in San Jose that's doing something, but you don't hear that much about it.
Hockey?
Yes, hockey.
Hockey. They still play that?
Apparently.
They must have just started. That must be a new thing.
I don't know. It's just some sort of fad.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. But yeah, coming back to what we were talking about for phones and devices. I mean, it just comes down to, you know, who owns things, right? When you buy something, you know, your rights for what you do with it are apparently more hamstrung than you might think they are. So that,
yeah, not always what you think they are.
Yeah, so that law is kind of weird from that kind of point of view. I mean, I can understand when I don't like it. I don't agree with like the walled garden aspect of like Facebook and Twitter over the Vine and Instagram stuff, but you know, they're private companies, right? So they're doing, you know, their private stuff for those companies. But, you know, when something is a law, that kind of affects everybody. And that's kind of just a little wacky for how that works. And so, I mean, coming down with those two, I think I advocate kind of public spaces with, you know, kind of open standards and open platforms and stuff like that. And then I also advocate private property, just being private. It's like, if I bought it, it's mine. I mean, there should not be any more like pushback about like what I can do with it and stuff. So
if I bought my weapons grade plutonium, it's mine. I own it.
Right. If you can find a way to legally buy weapons grade plutonium, you should have the right to do whatever you want with it, provided that it does not affect anybody else.
It's always legal if you buy it from Libyans, right? That's my understanding.
But only if you are paying for it in a bomb that you make out of pinball machine parts.
Right.
I believe that is the appropriate currency when dealing with Libyans.
No, that might be a stronger currency than the dollar will be soon.
Fiscal cliff. Are we still doing that? Is that still happening?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I hope not.
Yeah.
That's just bad news. That's not a thing.
Right. Not a thing. So I think we'll, we have one more topic. The, the best name ever. Because I was reading it and had to do a double take. So Brian Dennehy, not the actor. Apparently, the CMO of Nordstrom. Apparently, apparently he's not Brian Dennehy the actor. He's Brian Dennehy, the CMO of Nordstrom, has been playing a game of tag with his friends for like
23 years.
Right. Epic. I don't even know where to start.
I mean, the idea of playing a game of tag for that long, I think should be a thing.
Yeah.
But even more so, I think they should make a movie of involving Brian Dennehy working at Nordstrom.
So the way it works is that they used to play tag like in school, like you do, and when they were, you know, there was this bunch of friends. I think it was like nine friends, and they, you know, were kind of melancholy about not being able to play tag anymore. So what they did was they drafted some extra rules, one of which is no tag backs, which I think, you know, is a thing.
Yeah, yes.
'Cause it's so lame. Like, you tag them and they tag you back, and you just end up like slapping each other for like 5 minutes. That's ridiculous. Anyway, so no tag backs. And then the way it works is the tag rules are in effect only for the month of February. And if you're it at the end of the month, you're it for the rest of the year.
Yes.
And otherwise it's like fair game, and it becomes this, it sounds like it becomes this kind of escalating war of like sneaking into each other's houses and using
Borderline illegal activities.
yeah.
The shadiest game of tag.
Right. So I think it's funny because we were talking about the gamification of vandalism, and this is almost like the vandalism of games. Because there was one story in the article about a guy that snuck into someone else's house. He was just like, he tried all the doors and one of them was open, and he snuck into the guy's like bedroom and tagged him. He like threw the lights on and then tagged him, woke him up in the middle of the night. And what I thought was hilarious about it is that his wife, the reaction of his wife in the story is to yell the guy's name and say run, you know, like not, oh my God, what are you doing in my house, or get the hell out of my house, or anything like that. It's like, oh no, this is part of the tag game. You have to get out of here. Awesome. Awesome. This is the spouse I need. This is the commitment and dedication. It's just great. Unparalleled. It's a great article. If nothing else, it makes you want to play tag. It makes you want to, you know, bring a little more fun to an otherwise boring cubicle bound life.
Hey, cubicles can be f I can't even finish that sentence.
Yeah, I actually don't have a cubicle. I have a bullpen kind of area, so I only sort of have my own space. So yeah.
Why won't they give me a fourth wall? I just want a complete fourth wall. I get three and a half walls.
Yeah. Oh, I only have, yeah, so I only have two. So, you know, moving up in the
Oh, then
world,
I'm
buddy.
living rich. With your fancy cube with your three and a half walls.
Awesome. Well, that's mostly what I had to talk about this week. Do you have anything else, Brandon?
I think we covered it.
Okay. Well, that's it. That's it. No other things happened last week, so you guys can just chill out. We'll see you next week. We actually should have a lot to
Nothing
talk about. Yeah, we actually should have a lot to talk about next week. We're going to a couple shows for SF Sketchfest, which if you're still able to go to those things, please do so. They're great.
Yes.
I wholly advocate the San Francisco comedy scene. Or rather, the LA comedy scene
In
visiting the
San
San Francisco
Francisco.
comedy scene.
Yes. We really appreciate it.
It's great. It's good. Good stuff. So, we'll probably talk about that a little bit, and
Yeah, maybe have a themed episode next week.
yeah, laugh a minute. That's what it'll be. Laugh
Oh, way to set the bar.
a minute. Okay, maybe not. But a
Laugh a
special,
5 minute?
yeah, laugh a quarter hour.
Well, I mean, it's not necessarily that we are going to be funny. It's going to be us talking about funny things that we saw.
Yeah. Which, you know, has some appeal, I hope. Please send us logos. Send us logos.
Tell a friend.
Be our guests.
Yeah, be a guest. Tell a friend about the podcast. Send in a logo. Yeah. Get involved, people.
Write your congressman.
Yeah, write your congressman.
So we have a special treat for the end of the episode. For those that listen, you know that I bought a kazoo, and I will be deploying that kazoo very, very shortly.
I think that's the first time a kazoo has ever been deployed. Is this kazoo getting hazard pay?
It was airlifted, so it's gonna.
You can just enjoy the musical stylings of Alan Meridian and his kazoo orchestra of one.
Excellent. Okay, Brennan. I will see you sooner than next week.
Indeed. Mm-hmm.